If you're looking for the best horror, thriller, sci-fi, and WTF audio fiction this side of the apocalypse, then you should listen to The Other Stories. With over 500 stories on the podcast feed already, and new stories dropping every single Monday morning, The Other Stories is your new best friend. Check out The Other Stories today on any and all podcast platforms, or head to theotherstories.net. After all, these aren't the stories your mother used to tell you. These are The Other Stories.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best horror movies of all time and the worst ones. My name is Luke Condo with a Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
Ben Errington just admitted that he had a little nap whilst I was talking a second ago.
Yeah, you were talking, and it was a bit like, oh, dude, wrap it up. Wrap it up.
My,
have a little
my
sleep.
Voice does sound like a meditation soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know if I could listen to you in that context, though, I'm too familiar with you.
I remember listening to a meditation tape once, and it was really peaceful, and all of a sudden this sort of very brummy accent, the guy sort of, hello, like he probably like went straight in. I was like, I'm not comfortable anymore.
This is not wrong. Comfortable with a brummy being in both your ears. I can't Birmingham.
Birmingham. It was just very sort of, it's too thick. It's too thick to be relaxing. Not thick as it's
too
stupid,
thick to be. What is
the accent? Was
what is the most relaxing accent? Is it Irish?
I don't know. I would say the Irish is that relaxing, really.
Forgot about that. Choke me.
Yeah, the old choked Irish. I don't know, mate. I would say a nice Aussie accent can be pleasant if it's not over the top.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd sit opposite an Aussie guy in work, and you know he's always drinking Fosters, and
it's the problem with foreigners, because all foreigners are racist. That's the biggest problem with them.
there's a real big generalization there. All foreigners are bloody racist, all of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Horrific.
So, what have you got any guffs to share? Did you bring any guffs to work today?
Do you feel like we need to change the name of this section of the show?
Because I don't know why it was called Guff originally.
Horror Guff. Because every time you say it, like I know what it is, but then I always have this thought where I think if someone's tuned into this for the first time ever, first of all, if you're an American listener, Guff is going to be like...
It's not even an English word, is it? I mean, it's just I wouldn't even say it's like... I think people in Scotland might be like, what? I think people in Ireland might be,
what the fuck are you talking about there? What the fuck?
Horror gaffs. Well, for anyone, horror gaffs are basically just other things we've done. Although, to be fair, we don't really limit it to just horror stuff, do we?
No.
We just say, here's what we've been watching. I've been watching more Umbrella Academy. I've only got a couple left to go now, enjoying that. That's nice. That's nice. It's just juicy. It's very, very Watchmen. I think I've explained it before.
I've
very
heard.
Very stylish, very fun, great
I've
performance.
Heard it's like a Watchmen. By way of Tim Burton.
Yeah, definitely a lot of Tim Burton vibes. There's definitely a lot of, there's some guy liner in there, some mascara, definitely.
Yeah.
I also watched a film called Leave No Trace, which was a film that was very critically acclaimed last year. One of the ones I missed. A lot of people saying it should have been recognized more for like the awards and stuff. Directed by Deborah Granik. It's got Ben Foster in it, and it's about him and his daughter living in a park. Basically, he's like a army vet, and
Ben Foster's great.
Ben Foster is great. This is probably like Ben Foster has had some amazing performances in the past.
Pandora,
Pretend to Yuma is probably my favorite.
Oh yeah, Pretend to Yuma. Yeah.
But in this, it's just like his quietest performance is the only way I can put it. Yeah. Sometimes you're like, what?
What? Turn the volume up. What did
you say again? What? I mean, very well
subtitles portrayed. Are like 8-point font. What? What's he saying?
What the hell? Yeah, I mean, it's a good film. It looks great. Great cinematography. And it was, as I said, as quiet as he is in it, this film is very quiet as well. Sometimes I was like, have I got the sound up?
Yeah.
But yeah, a human story about their relationship. I won't really tell you anything else because I don't want to ruin that. But Leave No Trace, definitely worth a go. And as I think I told you before, I got onto a little bit of a 90s monster movie kick after watching some videos on YouTube, watching some compilations and bits and bobs about special effects. And I was a bit like, I want to watch some monster movies, but specifically 90s monster movies, because I guess that was my era, you know, growing up, first film questions I saw. So I picked a few that I remember seeing quite young and enjoying, and I've been rewatching them. So it was kind of a triple bill, I guess. So the first one was this film that we're going to review today. Second one, I watched Guillermo del Toro's Mimic. Yeah. And then I'm going to watch The Relic, which I think I enjoyed the most, if I remember right, out of these three films back in the day. But they're three films that I remember sort of watching for the first time very well. But yeah, Mimic, I was super bored. Like, I know the director's cut is supposed to be a lot better, because I know Guillermo del Toro had a lot of problems with those Weinsteins making this film. Yeah, it's just a bit boring, I think. Like, that's the thing. It kind of just there's this massive bloated section in the middle. The second act is so bloated and slow, and it kind of just, you don't know where the characters are or what's happening or what's, you know. I mean, there's a lot of exposition as well. And the CGI, Jesus. I do not remember it being it's so shiny. It's so shiny. Like, they're so dark. They're in like these catacombs and these like train tunnels and stuff.
Or something.
But it's just so shiny. Like, it's like the CGI looks like T-1000. They look chrome. It's not supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be insects.
I don't really remember anything about them. No, I remember a kid whistling out the window or something, or like playing some music.
There's a kid who like plays the spoons.
Yeah.
Sort of recreate stuff, but the thing is,
you play the spoons. I've tried to play the spoons many times, but
hard, isn't it? Yeah. Very hard. It's a lost art. Yeah. But the thing is, this film is supposed to. It's a really cool concept about like these genetically engineered cockroaches that can like mimic human form. That's great, right? I mean, that's like a really cool thing. But to be fair, you just get like a shadow who looks like he's in a trench coat milling about for a while, and eventually he goes, "Actually, look, I'm a cockroach." And that's it.
And they eat people. Is that what happens?
Yeah, but you don't get much more.
Yeah.
Like, you could have loads of cool things like that, couldn't you? It can mimic human form. Like, go in so many different directions.
Also, that means the idea of the spoon sounds really good. Does the cockroach man think the kid's talking to him or something?
The cockroach makes noises like that, and the kid sort of does this with the spoon. So I don't think there's a communication thing going on, but I think he maybe gets a bit intrigued by him. But Guillermo del Toro has apparently completely disowned the film.
Yeah, and then there's bits that like they had like other directors come in and shoot entire scenes. Like, I know Robert Rodriguez directed like one of the action sequences, but I don't know if he kept it or not.
Apparently, Mira Sorvino was quite a big deal back in these. Oh, I guess of course she was back in the 90s. And apparently, she said, "I'll leave the production if you sack Del Toro." And apparently, Weinstein's just went, "Okay, then." We'll let him stay.
Yeah, put it away, Harvey.
yeah, exactly. Put it away.
Spraying him with some water.
So, unfortunately, that it really didn't live up to, because in my head I remembered enjoying it, but I mean maybe I'll visit the director's cut at some point one day, who knows, just to see how it holds up against it.
Yeah, I would put Deep Blue Sea, and didn't we watch another one of those types? 13 Ghosts, I guess maybe that's a little bit later, I suppose.
Sort of like the action B movie type.
Yeah.
Kind of like Naff. Naff, I don't say Naff. But yeah, I think Anaconda fits into that bracket as well.
Congo. I think that fits into it. Is it?
Congo. I don't know if Congo does.
Is it not?
I don't think so. Maybe. I think you're leaning heavily on the horror element there. I think it's more like an action adventure with like
scary.
It's got like
killer monkeys. Like they crush people. Mm. I remember Vince Vaughn at the start, yes, it's either him or his brother gets his eye popped out and the monkeys.
Is Vince Vaughn in Congo?
put it in the Google machine. I'm fairly certain he is. No, I'm thinking of Bruce Campbell. Am I thinking of Vince Vaughn? Bruce Campbell?
Easy to get those.
I might be getting Lost
World. Bruce Campbell's in Congo. Yeah, he's the guy at the start.
There you go.
Easy to get those two guys confused. Yeah. Vince Vaughn is in the Lost World
and Evil Dead, right?
No. And he's the star of Evil Dead.
Yeah.
you're right.
Yeah. Anything else? What other things would go under that? Umbrella?
Under this umbrella. Yeah. We're open. Let's say we're open to suggestions from people, but
yeah,
in terms of that, maybe something like Tremors. Tremors.
I think Tremors is too. I feel like Tremors was designed to make like money and hit that market. Do you know what I mean? I feel like Tremors is too doing its own thing.
Know what you mean? How about Arachnophobia?
I don't know. But it's Jeff Daniels spiders. There's only one big monster, is there? It's just lots of maybe. I don't know.
Well, anyway, let's open it to suggestion. What films fall under that bracket? Because I think there's going to be absolutely loads that we're missing. But yeah, this film we're reviewing today is what would you say? Action, adventure, science fiction, horror. Monster sea movie.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Well, what guffs have you done, Luke? I've been talking about myself. I'm rambling on about myself for ages.
I've not done many guffs. I've been quite clean. Although I finished reading John Dies at the End. Have you seen the film John Dies at the End? I read the book.
No, I haven't. I haven't actually.
So the film I saw a long time ago is directed by Don Coscarelli, who did like Phantasm and some lovely jubbly films like that. But John Dies at the End is absolutely insane. Like, it's so Douglas Adams was doing like proper hot, like grindhousey horror, cosmic horror, loads of non sequiturs, no loads of like you'll be reading a line and then the next line will completely change what you thought was happening. Lots of things exploding, people, blood exploding everywhere. But it's got more of a sort of stoner comedy vibe to it. But it's like the most fun you'll have reading the book. Like there's a few sections, like a few great jokes in there. There's a bit where it's going to sound so silly, but there's like a guy who's possessed by some like multiple demons inside him. And every time he attacks people, he just punches them. It goes directly to the crotch. And there's a bit where the main character, David Wong, gets punched in the crotch four times. Like every time he's trying to fight this guy, he gets punched in the crotch. And then later on, as they're fighting somewhere, you just hear someone shout, "Ow, my crotch." And you just know that there's like loads of little, like stupid little silly. I enjoyed it for what it was. It's just silly. A bit of a mind melter in terms of where it goes. Like it doesn't follow a standard narrative arc at all. But
no.
Like every chapter, you'll laugh out loud and be disgusted and be horrified in equal measure. So it's worth.
How old is the film? It's like
I would say 2007-ish.
Okay.
It's got Paul Giamatti in it. I remember.
Oh, 2012 apparently.
2012, yeah. But like I don't remember. I remember the film being a little bit difficult to watch because of the same thing. Because it's like it just moves so fast. The plot points come so fast. It's like I don't understand what's happening. But now that I've read the book, I would like to go back to watch the film and just see how in keeping with it. It's insane, but in the best possible way.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's written by David Wong, and he's the protagonist of the book as well.
Yeah, so he's a made-up person. It's actually written by a guy, I think his name's Justin, but his pen name's David Wong. He's the editor of Cracked.com. So if you ever enjoy reading Cracked articles, then that's the sort of humour that you're going to find throughout this horror. Cosmic horror, body horror,
cosmic body
grindhouse horror sort of comedy.
Yeah, it's always been one of those just kind of passed me by. So,
well, I saw a lot of bad reviews on it on Goodreads where people just didn't like that it wasn't like easy to take in. Do you know what I mean? Because you just have to give stuff to go for the ride with it and not expect an actual story.
Yeah. Okay, I've got you.
Yeah. Other than that? No.
Other than that?
Other than that, nothing. But so today we're going to be talking about 1998's Deep Rising. I would have been 10 when this came out.
10-year-old Luke Condor. And he didn't see it back then. Is this the first time you've seen it?
Well, so I was pretty certain that I hadn't. I had this thing in my mind of what the film was going to be. And then 20 minutes in, I was like, oh, it's this film. I've seen this film before many times.
Okay. Yeah. It's got one of those like strange, ambiguous titles that were like really popular in the late 90s, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like with the word deep and rising, deep I impact. Guess. Deep impact,
deep blue sea.
Deep blue sea. Yeah.
The deepening.
The deepening. Deeper. Go deeper. Deep the throat. Deepest. Deep throat. Deep throat two. And deeper.
Throater. Deep hard.
Exactly. All of those. All of those. But yeah, this was a film that I remember seeing when I was pretty young and being like kind of a bit scared by. I think maybe it was because like the blood, and there are like a couple of particular two or three particular scenes that like have really stuck with me over the years that they kind of like I think about them quite often.
Mm.
One of them is a toilet based death.
Oh yeah.
That pops into my head a few times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember this film being more horror than it was. I mean, like there's some real gruesome bits in it that like obviously the makeup department have had a lot of fun making goo and blood and
lots of goo,
bones, lots of goo. Yeah, but it's a strange film because it does kind of like it really does cross the boundaries of this, and it reminds me of it reminds me of loads of things. Really, there's loads of things going on with it, but there are a few good ship. Almost said sheep based horrors. Then
Ghost Ship. That's another
Ghost Ship. Exactly. I was gonna say Ghost Ship, and then Triangle. A good ship.
I like ship horror.
I like ship horror. I think my love for ship horror started with a Resident Evil Game Boy game called Resident Evil Gaiden, where you were like Gaiden?
Ninja Gaiden. Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden. Gaiden. You can say it both ways. It's like Scone and Scum, mate, isn't it?
Yeah.
One's right, one's wrong, or one's wrong, one's right. No one knows. But yeah, that was like zombie-infested ship, and I always think that was creepy. And then another game came out called Dead Aim, which took place on a ship. And then, yeah, things like Ghost Ship and this and, you know, Titanic just made me love ship horror.
Yeah. I think we found a new genre because I don't think I've ever heard ship horror before. I'm pretty sure it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. The tone of this is weird because at times it's like, oh, they're trying to do The Mummy. They're trying to do that sort of comedy, horror, action, mummy sort of thing.
Well, this was the film that Stephen Sommers directed before The Mummy, right?
Yeah, well, there you go. This is like a prototype for that. And I didn't realize
So I think he directed it a couple of years before The Mummy, but ended up getting a bit delayed, and then it ended up coming out a year, like basically 98, a year before The Mummy.
That makes so much sense now you said that, because even like the lead character, I kind of feel like it was a prototype for Brendan Fraser's
100%
sort of character.
Even like in terms of weaponry, because I'm pretty sure Brendan Fraser's character in The Mummy has got like a shotgun that he pulls out of his... back.
And the moist creatures.
Yeah, moist creatures. There's a few actors in this who are in The Mummy as well. So obviously like Treat Williams' sidekick dude is a character.
Benny,
that's it, Benny.
It's like you're on the wrong side of the river. That guy.
We got all the horses.
Yeah.
Daddy.
I think he talks like that. I don't know. I do feel like this is definitely the prototype. It doesn't quite gel together as well as The Mummy, because The Mummy is pretty pitch perfect for what it's done. Like doing, I love to watch Mummy.
Yeah.
I can watch it anytime. Good. But this, I think the fact that no one's a good guy, like for the first 20 minutes, like no one's a good guy. No one's in this for good reasons.
Everyone's kind of a bastard who's looking after their own pocket in this film. Like everybody.
Treat Williams is pretty much in the wrong film, I think, because he's too nice, friendly looking to be playing a badass, I'm going to harpoon these mercenaries in the face.
He
is. Guy.
He'd be eaten alive if he's in this scenario.
He looks like he always has hard-boiled sweets in his pocket. He looks he looks like, I bet he blows balloons up like in one go for kids for his little party trick. He looks farting.
He gets a bit lightheaded, but he doesn't say that.
He doesn't say that. No, he keeps it in. Yeah, and then he goes to walk away and he sort of trips a bit, but then carries on. he looks like a lovely guy, but then you could tell he's sort of playing this.
Again, he's one of those guys, a face I recognise more than like his roles.
Yeah.
And he's been in absolutely loads of stuff. Like I was looking at his wiki page, he has been in loads of stuff. So pretty crazy. It's basically, you go to his filmography and it just says, oh, don't read this, there's loads of stuff. Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So, shall I give you the lowdown?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. So, Deep Rising is a 1998 American action horror film directed by Stephen Sommers and starring Treat Williams, Famke Janssen, and Anthony Held is third billing in this. He's like the owner of the ship, right? And there are so many other characters. There's basically a crew of mercenaries who are probably, how many? What are we saying? 10 strong? There's probably loads of them.
Between
8 and 20, there's a lot of them, and they're all like character actors that you will recognize from stuff, and some of the names, you know, who've gone on to bigger roles. I guess
it took me a while to figure out that was Famke Janssen,
which I think was after GoldenEye, though, right?
After GoldenEye.
So yeah, there's absolutely loads of others, and there's like a British dude playing the ship's captain, who I kind of recognize as well.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So a group of heavily armed hijackers board a luxury ocean liner in the South Pacific to loot it, only to do battle with a series of large-sized, tentacled, man-eating sea creatures who have already invaded the ship.
There you go. So there's another guy in it as well, who Trevor Goddard, who played Kano in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he is. I'm pretty sure he's he died not recently, but let's have a look.
Oh, don't be looking him up because I've got some trivia.
Okay, so. Okay. Well, he died in 2003. Have I ruined the trivia?
I don't think that was a question.
All right, okay.
But he did, And so I was like, oh, that's a guy from Mortal Kombat. So I ended up whilst watching the film looking into him and like feeling a bit sad because like he didn't die in a good way or anything. He's like 40 or something like that, really young. I was like, oh, that's such a shame because I wouldn't say he's a great actor, but he's
pretty cool in this.
He's Kano, he plays that role.
I think he's pretty cool in this. Like a lot of the characters are kind of like so pointless in this group of mercenaries. They're literally there to just get killed.
Yeah.
And I think even though he's also a character who's pretty much there to just get killed, I think he's at least given a little bit of, you know.
He's got a bit of meat to him.
Mamouli, that's Cliff Curtis, isn't it? Trevor Goddard is T-Ray.
Okay,
let's just listen to let's listen to the names of some of this group of mercenaries. So Wes Studi, obviously the Native American actor, Cherokee actor, again another character actor you'd recognise from loads and loads of shit. Things like he's in Mystery Men.
Who's this?
This is Wes Studi.
That guy.
He's in Mystery Men. Like the. Bowling ball dude, is that right? He's also
ball, that's
he plays Sagat in Street Fighter.
Oh yes,
yeah.
This is the guy in Mystery Men who's the like the spiritual leader sort of guy who doesn't say never really said anything.
Yeah,
are you bowling the ball or is the ball bowling you?
Exactly. He's that guy. Yeah, that dude. So yeah, the names. So he's Hanover, and then we've got like Jason Fleming as Mulligan, Cliff Curtis as Mamouli, Clifton Powell as Mason, Trevor Goddard as T-Ray. How'd you say the dude's name? Honsu.
He's great, and he's in loads of stuff. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy. He was in Gladiator. I'm pretty sure he was in Gladiator. Yeah. He was in Gladiator. He was in like Tomb Raider.
One of the James Bond films, Casino Royale, I think maybe.
Yeah, he's been in all of these films. I think he's been in a Fast and Furious film. But yeah, he's Vivo, and there's just like this massive crew of, basically, if you were hired by this crew of mercenaries just to basically take them on a boat somewhere,
yeah,
I'd be like, what's going on here? What's going on here, lads? How have you lot got together? What's happened? What's linking you?
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
I mean, it's so the film opens with that all the mercenaries have been taken on what's his name? Treat Williams' ship. He doesn't know where he's taking them, but they're paying him, and he's like, we don't care what evil you're doing, as long as you pay us, we're cheap, reliable, and average, which I think was the same thing that the guy in One Cut of the Dead said about his filmmaking. So they're taking all these mercenaries, and all the mercenaries are like cartoon villains, basically.
Yeah, everyone quips. They've got all the banter between each other, you know. Yeah. If you ain't got the banter, you wouldn't last for 5 seconds in that group.
No.
Because anything you'd say would just be torn apart, and you'd end up there threatening each other, putting guns to each other's heads, holding knives to each other's throats.
That was one thing that actually annoyed me. The amount of standoffs, like, in the first 10 minutes of the film. Like, Benny, whatever his name is, Joey Pantucci. What is his name, Kevin? You know, the guy who plays Benny in The Mummy. He's, like, sneaking around, and he finds a nuclear warhead in the cargo. He's like, oh, what's this? Not nuclear, it's a torpedo.
It's a torpedo. It's not new. That would be mental.
But then they find him, and then they start beating the crap out of him. Looks like they're really going to go at him, but he doesn't show any bruises or anything. He already looks a bit bruised, so it doesn't really affect him.
They're kicking him in the kidneys, I reckon.
Yeah. So then Treat Williams comes with a harpoon. He says, stop it, leave my guy alone, we need him. And there's like a standoff, and it's like, they're all going to kill each other within the first 10 minutes of the film. And this is what I mean, like, in terms of the tone. The stakes are well too high for... They've just been joking a second ago. Like,
yeah, they're all having a joke. I'm going to bloody kill you. I'm going to cut your knob off. Oh, don't do that. Oh, bloody hell. Next minute, they're like, I'm actually legitimately going to kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
There's even a bit where Treat Williams just like sucker punches one of them, like with a gun.
Dislocates the jaw or something.
His jaw or something. But there's like 10 of them.
Yeah.
What are you trying
and
to Treat
do? Treat Williams is like a fun uncle. He's not a
He's a fun
mercenary.
Uncle. Basically, every mercenary is like the alpha male.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them are alpha males. And, you know, you get 10 of them together and carnage is going to happen. Yeah. How is anyone going to wrangle this lot? How do they ever get anything done?
Yeah.
What are they going to do when they get on this boat that they're going to like attack or whatever?
Yeah. There's one point where they say they say torpedoes. They're talking about like the cargo. And I thought he said they're pedos. And I was like, what? What? Oh. Where'd these come from? But no, he said torpedoes.
I see.
And
easy to get confused.
Happens a lot.
Can we just talk about the name of the ship? It's called the Argonautica. Argonautica.
That's the cruise ship.
That's the cruise ship. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, okay. That's what I meant. Yeah. That is what I meant. That's the cruise ship that they're going towards. But that's a great name for a boat, right?
What's it called again?
Argonautica. Okay. Like Jason and the Argonauts. Tica.
Okay.
Argonautica. I can't even say it. Yeah. That's written down in front of me.
Well, the Argonautica is a big cruise ship. That's where they seem to be going. They're going to shoot the thing with torpedoes. Oh, okay, we find out a little bit later on that there's a scam happening.
There's a scam, yeah. So basically, this cruise ship is full of loads of well-to-do people having a lovely big party. It's the maiden voyage.
Yeah.
Everyone's loving life. There's like musicians banging drums. People are having a lovely party.
Those
drinking
drums
champagne.
Sound like Monster Island style tribal drums that and I think maybe that's what brings the creature from the deep, because you don't know what it is, but they're like drumming, and that kind of drumming is going to lure monsters. That's what happens.
Don't drum like that out on open sea. Jesus.
No. Yeah.
So then we've got like Famke Janssen, who's like just a wily thief.
Yeah.
She's just like, she's been down for burglary. She's been down for shoplifting. She's been down for
it all. She's pirating CDs. I think that's why they put her in the brig in this.
That's pretty much
because they like she runs away into the safe part of the ship, and then like she's like pirating DVDs or something like this. Two CDs pop up, and like you wouldn't steal her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they walk in at the wrong, like the guys walk in and say, oh.
she's doing a mass burn of the Venga Boys debut album her mates back at home.
Yeah.
And while she's at it, she's doing the release of Lion King 2, which only came out on DVD and video, not in theaters.
I think maybe after this film came out as well, which is amazing.
Exactly. There we go. she's wily. Yeah, wily thief.
Exactly, yeah. So she, again, she's not a good person. She's coming across as not many likable qualities about any of these people. Apart from that British guy who got his wallet stolen.
Which British guy gets his wallet stolen?
He's supposed to be like the captain of the ship or something.
Oh yeah, even he's a bit of a nose. Yeah. I think the nicest guys are like Treat Williams' right hand man. I think he's kind of alright, isn't he?
Yeah.
And his Asian girlfriend.
He's got an Asian girlfriend who's in the film for some reason. Not completely sure why she's
in the film to kind of just shout. She does a lot of shouting.
Yeah.
Like she has a bit of banter with Treat Williams. He's like, "Fix my boat, bitch." And she's a bit like, "Why didn't you do it?"
Yeah.
It's a lovely bit of banter between those guys.
Yeah. But then she doesn't really do too much else.
No, again, fodder. A lot of people in this film are fodder just to be ripped apart by some CGI tentacles.
I'm not going to be able to not compare this to The Mummy now, but in The Mummy, even the fodder, like the Americans, are actually, you kind of like them in a weird way. They're kind of charming. And when they die, you know, when a guy loses his glasses and the mummy comes to get him.
Sad. The Americans are fodder, but I think they're made out to be like, still looking after their pockets, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're in the wrong. They're going to like die, but
they've got a little bit of personality.
Yeah, exactly.
And then these guys have got personality, but they are just all douchebags.
Yeah.
It's a big dick swinging competition, this, isn't it? All these lot.
Yeah. So
I'd be like absolutely exhausted hanging around with this lot. I'd just be like, fuck it. You couldn't sleep. You couldn't sleep.
There'd like, you can't sleep in here because you know they'll be doing some sort of prank or something.
They'll be doing something. They'll be like rubbing chilies all over your
penis
area.
Oh, he likes it.
Probably like it. They'll put a loaded gun in your hand or something and then put it to your head.
Yeah, put your hand in like warm water. Then you piss yourself.
Push yourself and shoot yourself. And I'm like, wait! He just shot himself in the head. Yeah. He's got a baby on the way.
These guys are not the kind of guys you want on a stag do. They'd go too far.
Oh, my God. If you were with these guys on a stag do, A, they'd like, they'd take someone hostage and probably like murder someone.
You would end up like strapped to like a lamppost, naked, balls out.
And then they shoot a torpedo at you.
Yeah, that's what these kind of guys are like, yeah. So around this time, the drums are going in Argonauticus, and the mercenary ship is on the way, and there's something in the water flying towards them that isn't a torpedo, and it's got like a making like a wee sort of noise.
Wee! That's a bit strange.
Because like, even when like I don't think it should have made noise. Like they're like looking out at the water, and they're like, "What's that strange noise?" And then you can
almost like a weird sort of high pitched like.
Yeah,
what is it? I can't remember it now very well. What is it? It's noise.
Like a screeching sort of slithering noise, and I'm like, it's in the water. You probably wouldn't hear that.
That's some kind of sound.
But if it pelts into the bottom of the Argonaut Costa Co, and the whole thing sort of rocks, and then the shit hits the fan.
Basically, this film completely blew its stuntman budget in like about. In about 14 seconds. Yeah, but we got hundreds of people, you know, flying all over the place, falling off balconies, flying through windows. Trampled. Just basically the boats getting fucked right up.
It's like the end of Titanic, but with a monster. We didn't see the monster yet.
Yeah. And then all this is happening, and then we see Famke Janssen, like a couple of boxes of apples fall on her.
And we have your favourite scene with the woman who just was just dying for the toilet. She's like, I'll leave, but...
My favourite scene. What are you trying to say?
Well, you said it's affected. You said you've never forgot this
scene. Yeah, this kind of affected me as a kid. Cause, well, however old I was when I first saw this film. Because she sits on the toilet, starts crying. You know, that's always bad. That's always bad.
Yeah.
But then, like, some kind of thing, unseen thing, comes up through the toilet and, like, kind of rips her down into it. And a big splash of blood on the mirror.
The big splash of blood thing. This film does it a fair bit. I always think of... Do you ever watch Supernatural? Did you ever watch any episodes of it?
A little bit.
So before, like, when at the start of every episode, 90% of episodes, before the titles, show up on the screen, Supernatural. Like, they'd have, like, some guy get killed or something, but won't see what happens. They would go off screen, off camera, and you just see the splash of blood, and then it would go Supernatural. This film did it so often. We just
off-screen death.
Off-screen and then a splash of blood.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I mean, it works. I mean, what can you say?
I mean, sometimes it works, but you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, so basically, this big creature... Well, these creatures, tentacles, are basically, but you don't see them for a while. This is the thing; they're hidden. I mean, when they showed themselves, but you don't see them for a while. People getting pulled down into things and ripped off and all this shit.
My wallet
getting ripped off. My bloody wallet, you bastard!
Yeah,
but a speedboat falls off the boat falls off the cruise liner at one point, and that is what Finnegan.
Yeah.
That's what his boat crashes into.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, God, keep your eye on the water, mate. Jesus. Just another vessel over there. Whoa!
Yeah. What was it? A speedboat they run into? An escape boat or something?
Yes. So there's a speedboat which falls off the ocean, falls off the cruise ship, and when they crash into it, it just explodes, basically making a big hole in Finnegan's boat. Yeah. You think that'd be the end for his boat, but for some reason it's like it's all right.
They fix it. They try and fix it later on.
You just need to fix it with brown paper and vinegar. That's all you need to do.
Some gaffer tape. So they arrive on the boat and on the Argonauticus. What the fuck is it called? Argonautica.
Yeah.
They arrive on the Argonautica and everyone's gone. Everyone's been like disappeared. And it's a bit of a ghost ship sort of vibe.
It's a ghost ship.
Yeah.
Ghost ship vibe.
There's one bit where all the mercenaries have got the guns, like these crazy, unrealistic sort of mini Gatling gun things.
It's basically the gun you get at the end of a game before the final boss.
And there's like a single noise and everyone starts shooting at a wall. Why would you shoot at the wall?
Yeah, they shoot for about 30 seconds. And then they realize how good the guns are and start shooting again. First of all, I'm thinking ammo conservation. How much ammo have they got?
Yeah.
And just like, and then at one point they're firing these guns, these massive like automatic rifles that are going. And there's one point Treat Williams like shouts over the guns and goes, "Stop!"
Yeah.
You don't fucking hear.
Yeah. And what's his name? Their captain, their mercenary captain. He's got a very quiet, calm voice.
Yeah, Cherokee dude. Where's Studi?
Yeah, where's Studi? Where's Freedy? So he's what happens? Oh yeah, so they split up or something, or Mamouli and T-Ray and Benny and Treat go into one room, and Audiobus go into another room.
Yeah, there's a lot of like people unnecessarily just splitting off now for some reason. So obviously they meet Trinity. No, not Trinity. That's from Matrix, isn't it? Trillion, her name is. Trillion. There they find her. So basically, people start getting kind of picked apart. They need to go down to this like workshop thing to get some parts to fix the boat. So they go off down there.
Yeah.
And then it's basically revealed. Is it revealed at this point that the mercenaries were here to like rob the boat?
I think that's when the actual captain, not the captain.
Yeah, yeah. I think. Yeah, they've obviously got bad intentions at this point. I think everybody's aware of that, including Treaty.
So as they're sort of all split up, they hear some noises. One of them, T-Ray, goes to check on some noises, and he gets like yanked into the water, and we get the blood splash. He gets turned into a puddle of blood.
Nice.
And then Mamouli, who's like jacking off in the corner of the room, looking at
what are you
pictures.
Jerking off for, Mamouli?
Yeah.
He gets pulled into like what, 2 feet of water and dragged around.
Yeah, and then he goes, it sort of pulls him between a set of pipes that are too small for a man to fit through, and that's enough for him to just pop.
And there's another bit of blood off screen comes in to show you he's dead. Yeah. That's how they confirm kills in this, right? You don't need to check their pulse.
Yeah,
it's just a bit of blood is shown. What's the most iconic for you moment of that in a film? Blood off screen.
Blood to confirm, pop it. Confirm
or something like that, where you don't see someone dying, but you see like a splash of blood, or you see blood somewhere, so you realise someone has died. Because I think that was done a lot in a 90s horror.
Yeah.
Especially where the threat was supposed to be CGI. For me, it was in The Lost World, when dude gets attacked by all the compies, the tiny little dinosaurs.
Yeah,
and they kind of all ravage him, and then you, it sort of pans down a river, and you see the blood.
Oh, that's quite good, though. Like if it's trickling down the river, but
yeah,
it's a splat. I don't think.
Oh, you. I don't mean specifically a splat, but we can talk specific splats if you like.
Well, I just feel like if Dexter was, because he's a blood splatter analyst, if he was on the scene, he'd be like, "Nope, this isn't blood. Doesn't do that. Shoot out of the head. It's like the head is a balloon full of blood, and it popped."
Yeah,
that's not how reality works.
What?
But that way you're talking about that trickling down the river, that's good. I like that. That's
So I guess it's because like monsters, like it's a way of showing the monster without showing the monster, or showing the, or upping the monster's kill count without needing to give us a big CGI blob.
And I feel like it's a way of doing gore without having all the expense of doing gore. You know what I mean? Although this film
can be expensive doing gore, mate, can it?
Well, yeah.
We all know that.
But this film does have some great gore bits in it as well. These sort of slightly less good bits. So they're dead. Benny and Treat go back to the other guys, and they're convinced that they've killed them because everyone's killing each other. So why would they not be convinced?
Yeah, they were standing off at the start when they were all having a laugh and a joke. So now the stakes are upped again. Of course, they're all ready to kill each other.
Yeah.
So they basically open the vault, this main vault in the ship. The mercenaries are like, "This is our goal anyway. We wanted to get inside the vault, so we don't care. We don't care that something strange is happening. We're still gonna mug people off." And now we get probably one of the most like ridiculous death scenes. I rewound it and watched it 3 times because I was like, "What just happened?"
Yeah. Well, just before this bit, Benny drops a peanut. And he's trying to eat this peanut. do you remember? And he drops it and it makes that proper.
I can't do it. Any excuse to make that noise podcast.
There we go.
We need to get a supercut of you of you making that noise in this pocket. Does he drop a peanut?
Drops a peanut. He's like trying to eat a peanut. I don't know why he's struggling because it's just a normal peanut.
Just put it in your mouth.
And then Treat's like, "What are you doing there?" And he's like, "Me eating a peanut." And he drops it and he goes,
And it's like, it's gone now. You drop it in the water, that's it.
Yeah. And then they open the bank vault and an axe flies out into...
They open a bank vault and an axe flies out and kills Vivo, played by Digimon Monsu. I'm butchering people's names, man.
It's difficult.
I'm butchering people's names. So an axe just basically immediately kills him. Then some of the mercenaries just fire their guns into this vault, killing like three or four people, apart from the important people who are the captain and the owner of the ship. So I mean, it's all a bit mental, isn't it? And he says, "Oh, sorry, I killed him. I thought he was one of his creatures." Oh yeah, because one of his creatures open doors, don't they?
Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, it's like an octopus get through a hole on a ship.
I like the octopus comparisons. There's a few sort of like stories of octopuses in this that people sort of say, and octopuses are scary as fuck.
Yeah.
Right.
There's that bit where the guy's like, "Oh, my mate had a pet fish, and he put it in a tub, and he gave the tub to the octopus, and it took the octopus a minute to work out how to open up the." Is that this film, or I'm thinking of something else?
This film.
Yeah.
And they're using it as a metaphor to try and say basically they're the fish, and you know, this big sea monster is essentially the octopus.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the size of this octopus, I just keep the size of this creature, I just keep thinking, is it gonna be trying to kill this kid? Well, I don't know.
It's weird, this creature, because it's, we find out later on, it's inside the ship, like it's got in, but then it's like it's got different rooms. Like this is its feeding room. it doesn't eat with its mouth, like it eats with its fingertips.
And it kind of drinks people, it says. Yeah. So, like, it sucks people up for its tentacles.
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. Sucks people up for its tentacles, basically drinks all the stuff and then expels the bones.
Yeah, yeah.
Peel! I don't like it!
Like a peanut shell. Maybe that's what the metaphor was there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very subtle.
So, and at this point, they also break out Famke Janssen's character.
Yeah, she's been kept in like a little cell for doing all the burglary.
Her and what's his fate? Treat's like relationship is far too advanced. Like they flirt within seconds, and like and Treat, although he's a handsome guy, I mean, what is he? 20 years older than her? I don't know.
I'm just thinking that. And also, like in a situation like this, where like inevitable death is about to happen. My best side wouldn't be coming out, let alone.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to be flirting with people. I'd be fucking getting out of there. Like, yeah, exactly.
Even if it was Famke Janssen post GoldenEye, I would still be like, "All right, love, let's get out of here then."
Yeah.
Come on, what have you been doing in there? Oh, let's go, let's do it. If she went like, "Oh, are you doing hot stuff?" I'd be like, inappropriate.
The wrong time. There's a time and place for that kind of thing. I don't know, Treat Williams, you know, he's like fun uncle. Yeah,
you know what he's like, and you know, he never knows when if he is gonna die, he's thinking better squeeze in all the action I can get.
Yeah, yeah. So then all of them are sort of running around for a bit. We get a first instance of tentacles, which looks like at this point I think we're supposed to think they're like big snakes or something. They're sort of in the rafters and they shoot them and a guy slips out. And we have my favourite gore thing of the film.
Yeah.
Which is a guy who they'd left, you know, off earlier somewhere.
I think we need to confirm that there were two people left on the original boat, one of the mercenaries, and the Asian girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who is, I think her name's Leela. But basically she gets killed like pretty quick sharp.
Yeah.
Sorry that we left her out. And so then this guy gets sucked off as well, sucked into a he gets sucked off on screen. He gets sucked off of screen.
Yeah, well, he gets sucked up. Sucked away. He gets sucked away from the screen.
He gets sucked away. Even that sounds wrong. He basically
gets hoovered up.
He gets hoovered up. There we go. Yeah. By the creature.
Yeah.
And then he turns up later. With all of his juices. I've been sucked out of him. It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he's like missing half his like skin and juices and his.
This looks pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Looks surprisingly great. Like, I mean,
like I think
I think it was a bit CG. No, it was a bit CG, but I want. How much of this is practical, do you think?
I think a lot of this was CG, especially the head, obviously, yeah. Obviously, a lot of practical stuff in the like feeding room.
Yeah.
But I think I'd hazard a guess that every part of the creature was CG, because I don't think I saw one bit where I was like, "Ooh, looks neat."
They must just had like tennis balls on sticks. I mean, that's how they used to do it.
I'm confused by the anatomy of this creature though, because at some point you see the tentacles are like chasing people down walkways, but they're kind of like rolling.
They're kind of like rolling, sort of spilling, aren't they? Like, yeah. It's like someone's pouring spaghetti.
I do kind of not understand the anatomy of it, because also if this creature's huge and in the ship in the middle, how is it managing to get its arms like all over the ship?
It must be stuck. Like, it's moved its arms like in every sort of which way. What was that game you used to play as kids where you'd sort of tangle up your arms? You had to get someone to go in.
Twister.
Is it? I thought it was like Doctor or something. But
what, you mean Twister with the mat where you put your
Everyone holds hands and they all sort of twist around the lock, and someone has to come and untangle them. But this octopus is stuck. It must be. Also, like, so there's always a head, like a tentacle head. But like, surely they're at the ends. Do you know what I mean? Why is there like always one ready to pop out? Like, it's all ends.
How does it know? Like, are the tentacles, like, they've got their own sense of something?
Well, they look sentient. It's weird. They look like they're alive.
They look weird. They've got like weird sort of faces. Because I guess when you initially watch this film and you haven't seen it before, you'd assume that the tentacles are the creature.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. Like a fake out.
A fake out, man.
It's not. You see the brain pretty soon, I think. So they're running away from this thing. They're shooting it. What happens now? So,
like, people just start getting picked off in various ways. There's like people are running away, and you know, someone throws a grenade at it.
There's a bit under the water where it's, you know, like it's a bit like Alien Resurrection where it's swimming through the water.
Yeah,
gets pulled off, pulled away.
Someone gets pulled off. Someone gets pulled off. So there's like people getting. I think they all eventually, people who survive get herded towards the bow of the ship, which is where we get this.
The feeding room, right?
I think we see the feeding room at some point. Yeah, where obviously just full of these horrible, juicy skeletal remains, like pretty much everywhere. So this is where we find out that the creatures. Also, the owner of the ship kind of is the exposition for this creature. He's also the expert
of octopuses.
Yeah, because there's no like scientist or like person who's encountered these creatures before. Well, I guess you kind of usually have in these films, don't you need it?
Because what does he say? He says it sucks the juices out of you. Like, that's what he says.
Drinks you. Yeah, but like, he has no idea, really.
Yeah.
If I was there and he was there as well, I'd be like, you're just talking shit, mate. To be honest.
Yeah. What?
Talking out your arse.
You could just, it's the Sarlacc. Like, you could just say anything. Like, what? Yeah.
Just give me a scientist and I'll believe him, all right?
Yeah. His name is Kenneth Branagh. And it's, you could just say whatever you want and people would be like, okay, that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we know.
So, yeah. Around about this point, it's weird this, because it kind of like in the third act, it gets a bit lost because it kind of has Finnegan and Trillian like going back to Finnegan's boat to like sort the engine, to like basically fix the engine. But then he realizes he's lost the parts and then he has to go back to the boat. I don't know. It just feels a bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A bit like, oh, we're here, then we're there. What are we going to do? Going over there, are we? Yeah.
Yeah.
We do get some good jet ski action, don't we?
Yeah, so Benny gets shot and he potentially sacrificed himself. I mean, the idea is they're going to ram the torpedoes into the belly of the ship, and we also get to see the big face of the monster.
Yep.
The big squid head thing.
And it picks up a treat. And
it does,
goes to give him a kiss and have a look at him, but Finnegan just shoots it in the face with a shotgun or the eye.
Yeah, if you've played enough Resident Evil, you know that's the weak point of the enemy.
Yeah, obviously eyeball.
There's there's a jet ski chase, but a tentacle is chasing through the ship.
Yeah, that was pretty cool because he's like, we need to jump from here to here, and they get a bit of a run up and then suddenly they stop because the tentacles are there. And how does the eventual like big explosion happen?
Well, so Benny drives the other boat full of torpedoes, full of boomer torpedoes, into the ship, and it explodes, and our heroes escape.
And at this point, Benny definitely dead. There's no way he survived that, right? No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, so Treat and Famke Janssen, they end up on a remote island, and they were like, "Oh, we're lost on an island," and then they kiss, and it's like, "Oh, we're on an island together." And then Benny's like, "O'Connell, O'Connell,
O'Connell, I'm on the other side of the river."
Yeah, and he swims. He's like, he's fine. And also his girlfriend that he loves dead, but he doesn't seem to be that bothered about it. As long as Famke Janssen,
not briefly, he briefly mourns her at some point.
But I think a single tear is not enough.
A single tear, which he catches and then just flings out the window.
Yeah.
So apparently, what did you say?
I just said his tear makes that noise. Is it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry if I'm ruining trivia, but I read that his death didn't test well, Benny. So they just decided to add him surviving to the end of it.
Oh, that's not in trivia, but it's interesting.
Yeah, interesting. So obviously, when they're on the boat, obviously they're like, "Oh, we survived that. We survived that." And then they hear like a huge roar and like crashing of trees of like some sort of, there's another beast.
Yeah. And then
in the forest.
So in the Wikipedia plot summary at the end, it says Finnegan is heard saying his movie catchphrase, "Now what?" as the film ends. I'm like, what catchphrase? It's not his catchphrase. Where did that come from?
Oh yeah,
I think he said it once before.
To be fair,
you can't say it's a catchphrase.
I think what's happening in this film is they're trying to make him Han Solo, because he at one point he does say, "I've got a bad feeling about this."
Yeah.
So, and I can kind of understand that, where he's supposed to be like he's a bit of a womanizer.
Yeah.
But you know, has he got Art of Gold? Maybe he has. And his Chewbacca is Benny.
I think Han Solo would. I think Harrison Ford would have fit the sort of badass side of it a little bit better.
Definitely.
But Treatment is too nice.
What are you gonna do, right? You basically just survived like a whole night trying to evade a massive sea monster. You've just washed up on a beach, like all your guns are gonna be useless, waterlogged, and now you've got to fight another creature. Do you think they were aiming for a sequel?
No, what? I don't think so. I think
Skull Island.
I think they were just doing a Skull Island sort of nod. It's basically they did like the drums at the start, and it was all very Skull Island-y at times, but. And then the credits roll, and then we get to the trivia part of the film, which is like the post-credit scene. So, are you ready?
Yeah. Yes.
I've got to get this one out of the way now because we're already kind of talking about it. Which space rapscallion turned down the role of sea rapscallion Finnegan?
Space rapscallion? Well, it can't have been Harrison. Surely not Harrison Ford. Surely they wouldn't have been. Would they really link him to this film?
Harrison Ford turned down the role of Finnegan, and as such, the production's budget was downsized.
Oh, okay. The budget was downsized. Well,
yeah,
it would have cost a bomb anyway, right? Treat Williams, he'll work for free.
Yeah. You have to pay him in bombs. That's the only
In bombs. As long as he gets to say his catchphrase, though, at every turn. Now what?
Yeah.
Oh, now what?
Yeah. Number two. Whose most hated films list did this film appear on?
Most hated.
Yeah, he's a big voice in film review, film critique.
Ebert.
Yes, Roger Ebert's very popular most hated list has appeared on that.
Oh wow, most hated.
I know. Jesus. Yeah. So yeah, number three, Deep Rising was released approximately one month after what ship horror film?
Oh God.
Deep Rising was released approximately 1 month after what ship horror?
Ship horror.
Well, I wouldn't put it as ship horror, but you did say it was earlier.
Have we mentioned it? Was it released 1 month after Titanic?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Ship horror. When you think about it, Titanic's horrific.
Yeah.
Well, much bigger body count than this film.
Yeah. But it's got romance to it and stuff. It's got an old gem.
Sex in a car.
And she's wearing a little diamond.
drawing Kate Winslet's breasties.
Breasties, breasticles. Yeah.
It is a horror, isn't it?
Okay, number four. Like I said, I went down a bit of a Trevor Goddard hole. Number four is Trevor Goddard Australian? Because he says he's Australian in this film, and he comes across as Australian when he plays Kano.
He reminds me so much of Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
He's like in this film, at least, he's got a very Colin Farrelly like.
Eh? Farrelly Brothers, yeah.
Colin Farrell. Yeah. He's got a look in his eye where he's like, I'm up to no good, and I don't care who knows it, even though Colin Farrell's Irish.
I'm up to no good, mate.
I'm up to no good, these laddies. I'll tell you what, though. That was awful. No, I said laddies, like I'm Scottish. I tell you what, though, bloody Irish.
Yeah.
Yep.
So is he Australian? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
No, he's not. And I knew it when I heard him. I was like, that's not a real Australian accent. That's like a fake street accent that I do. He said for much of his career, he claimed to be Australian and often played Australian characters. And this was to get more parts. Maybe people liked Australian actors at the time. I don't know.
Maybe Australian actors. I was about to say Home and Away. Basically, Jason Donovan wasn't available for this. So they're like, we need the next big Australian at the time.
Chris Hemsworth, Guy Pearce, Eric Banner. Oops.
Eric Banner.
The other Hemsworth, probably. I don't know. Kylie Minogue.
Kylie Minogue would have owned this film. Kylie Minogue, Danny
Curly
Minogue.
Straight Minogue. Well, there's a lot of great Australian talent, you know?
Yeah.
And he does kind of come across as an Aussie in some ways.
Yeah, he does.
Number five, then, the last question. When did Trevor Goddard, and I was going to do every question about Trevor Goddard, but decided not to. When did Trevor Goddard make his last screen appearance? Like, on what film?
On what film?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I have absolutely no idea. Was he in some sort of... Give me a clue. You're going to have to give me a clue, because...
You best start believing in ghost stories. You're in one. That's a terrible impression. But...
You best start believing in ghost stories. You're in one.
Yeah.
It's awful that I can't even think of what that is. You're going to have to tell me.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
I feel like you're on the nearly there. Okay, so it's
2003 ghost stories
film. 2003. One. I didn't realize this film was this old. It's Pirates of the Caribbean: The Curse of the Black Pearl. That was the last film. Yeah, and that was.
I feel like I didn't feel so bad now because I kind of recently I thought I've kind of forgotten everything about Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's amazing. It's a great film.
Someone was saying they're doing a reboot, and I was like, I can't even remember. I remember the films being so long.
2003.
The original one is great. It is.
Yeah.
So who is he in that?
I don't know. One of the pirates, probably.
Let's have a look. Trevor Goddard, Pirates of the Caribbean.
And it just says here, on 7th of June 2003, Goddard was found dead in his home in North Hollywood, Los Angeles, only 40 years old. Then I just found that really tragic.
That's pretty tragic. He was a pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean. Just one of Barbossa's crew. There was a picture of him stood next to Barbossa looking menacing.
Like, thinking about it now, I can imagine, and I think I can picture him, because we watched Pirates of the Caribbean a lot, me and Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
I still think that the opening introduction to Jack Sparrow is one of the most perfect cinema moments. Just the way sort of the ship's sinking and he steps off onto the
so yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So what do you think of the film? What are you going to rate it?
I think it was pretty enjoyable. It was pretty fun. CGI was pretty ropey. Mm. It's not a film that I feel like now I've seen it recently. I don't need to watch it for a while. I can't think of words. I can't string sentences together today. I apologize.
No, I like it.
Oh, I like it. I think it's fun for what it is. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Deep, but it's rising.
I couldn't go higher than a C.
Ooh. Okay.
I couldn't go higher than a C. Because now I feel like I don't need to see it again for at least.
You could say it's at sea level.
Oh my God! Oh, no, you didn't. No, are you going to go above or below sea level then? That's what I'm saying.
Slightly below sea level. D plus. I'm like, you know what? Out of these films, Relic and Deep Rising. Deep Rising. Deep Blue Sea. All the other films. I feel like this is a little bit below par. So it's, I don't know, it just doesn't quite come together. It's a little bit boring.
It's a bit boring. It's not as iconic as perhaps it could be.
It needed more of the creature in it, and I think Treat Williams, look, you seem like a very nice guy, but this isn't the role for you.
Not strong enough lead. No. Not strong enough lead. I mean, Deep Blue Sea, I wouldn't say has got the strongest lead.
It's got LL Cool J in it and Samuel.
But exactly, it's got that little summit.
And what's his name? I've got his name. It's not proving my point, but you know the guy who plays Punisher, Thomas Jane.
Thomas Jane, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He almost feels like, it almost feels like a like placeholder hero. Treat Williams does.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, when you're playing you know, a board game. And like, it's like, oh, I'm Captain Hannigan, whatever his name is. It's like a picture of what you imagine that person to look like. Like, it's not got too much character to him to the point where, like, you can't see yourself as this guy.
There's no gristle on that meat.
No, yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's no gristle. He's a lovely, he's a prime cut,
yeah,
meat. But there's no, like, he's not been seasoned.
No,
and
I think he's too seasoned, mate. It's gone. It's too salty.
Too seasoned.
Well, I mean, like, he's. I think.
I reckon bland. I reckon no seasoning.
Mate, they should have put Kurt Russell in this role or some. Well, I mean, yeah. Harrison Ford would have been pretty great. Brendan Fraser may be a bit young. No, they should have put him in anyway. Back when he was playing that caveman.
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, there you go. Although, I mean, Treat Williams. Remake it. It's got a great name.
Good. So, but I think it suffers from that. And as you said, I think in terms of the levels of these films, it just gets a bit boring. And I think that's what, I mean, films like this can be great when they're entertaining, but I think it just does suffer from being a bit boring in places.
Mm.
So I'll give it a C, mate. All right.
All right. D plus to me. So next week, did you still want to do The Relic or something? Or do you want to move on to something that's not in the 90s?
It's up to you, really. Do you fancy watching another 90s monster movie to round off a nice double bill?
I could go for another plate of this.
Could you go for a Relic?
I'd go for a Relic or a Congo, but you don't agree with me that Congo is a horror.
I don't. Well, we can discuss this, but I don't think Congo falls into the horror bracket. But, you know, maybe we'll put it out there.
Okay.
What should we do next? But yeah, The Relic, I think, looks like it's going to be the next one, unless you have your wicked way.
No, that sounds good.
And then we need to get back to the list, I think, briefly, don't we?
Yeah, we should do, really. Okay, and that's us for today. This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to me, co-host Ben, for being a writer or a dude.
Thank you very much, Luke Condor. Can you just do the noise one more time, just for?
My lips are dry.
Oh.
Oh, I can't do it.
It was a bit breathy.
Stage fright.
I'll give that one a 5 out of 10.
I'll practice.
Very nice.
In a bit.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.